You're listening to episode 12 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
David, we have a lot of interesting news items to go through tonight. I'm not sure if we can fit them all in, but I think we'll try our best.
Well, you know, we've got that hard time limit, but in this episode, we've got an article on drone safety and how and self-policing. We've got Piaggio has decided to create their male UAV from a biz jet, sort of. A drone invasion that turns out to be a flight of birds. The Taranis unmanned aerial vehicle, or UAS, makes its first flight in Australia. Vertical takeoff and landings for UAVs. CASA in Australia threatens drones that were used to help the firefighters in the wildfires currently in the last couple weeks. The impact of UAVs on the next-gen ATC system, which, you know, the ATC next-gen, meaning we're never going to see it, and it'll be the next generation after next that will get it. And last but not least, looking at drones to deliver cargo in Africa, to boldly go where no drone has gone before.
Fascinating.
We got a long list, and let's get started. Our first article is from NPR, and their All Things Considered blog. No seatbelts required. Drone hobbyists talk safety. Chris Anderson, who founded 3D Robotics and Do-It-Yourself Drones, and a friend of this show and friend of our other show, Airplane Geeks, is quoted as saying, "Why? Because I want clarity. We want to know what the landscape is so that we can respond appropriately." Anderson says such clarity could start with a few definitions like what a recreational drone really is. So what do you think, Max? We've been talking about this over the last couple of weeks, huh?
Yes, we have. And one way to look at it is that this activity is transitioning in many ways from the hobbyist to something that's more commercial. Now, certainly there have been commercial applications in some areas, definitely military applications in some areas, and then a lot of hobbyists kind of growing up from the bottom. As a hobby like this develops, at least one that raises so many interesting questions about things like safety and privacy, things like that, we get to the point where, whether we like it or not, we start to have to generate some rules that we can all live under. And I think the time is ripe to start doing that.
It's definitely the hobbyist industry is coming up with the, if we don't do it, somebody else will, and we probably won't like it. So we've got some things here where the lines have been blurred, and people are pushing the envelopes and giving other people who follow the rules and obey the rules a bad name. So it's definitely time for the industry to start policing itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially as we see in the press, a few reports here and there of accidents involving UAVs and systems like that. And those are going to get a lot of publicity. And that just increases the chances that if the hobby or the industry doesn't look inward and develop the rules or the regulations to live by, somebody else is going to come along and do it for us. I mean, certainly the FAA is looking at commercial applications and what the regulations are going to be, but there's kind of a different level too, something that should apply to the hobbyists and to the common man who might be operating these kinds of vehicles.
It's definitely the right direction, and it sounds like the cries of let's get our house in order is coming from above, and I think it's a really good start that they're, and we'll have to keep following it and see what develops. And if, and like we said in previous episodes, following the model of the Academy of Model Aeronautics or the model rocketry hobbyists, those are excellent models for the UAV hobbyists to follow. So I think we're taking steps in the right direction, and if we can counteract any bad press because we're doing the right things, then that's even better for the hobbyist.
Yeah, for sure. One aircraft that we've always kind of been enamored with is the Piaggio, this twin pusher aircraft, because it's kind of unique and it has an interesting sound and it just looks really cool. But they're making some steps into the unmanned arena.
Yeah, the Piaggio is definitely Airplane Geek's favorite airplane. And if you've never heard one, there's a couple that fly in and out of Philadelphia International Airport by me, and you can definitely hear it coming. It's definitely a unique aircraft. But if you take out a very efficient business aircraft like the Piaggio and put in aircraft systems so that it can fly as a remotely piloted aircraft or an RPA, you can start filling it with electronics and sensors, and you have a proven tested airframe and engines, and all you're doing is filling the black boxes. And that's what Piaggio is doing. They're creating a mail UAV that they want to offer to European customers, with the Italy being one of the first ones, as well as the United Arab Emirates, as a cheap alternative with off-the-shelf components for a UAV for surveillance.
Yeah, it's a great strategy, I think. Most of the aircraft we see tend to be clean sheet of paper designs. And so, I mean, that's great. Something's purpose-built from scratch, but it's probably the most expensive way to do it, because you've got to design something from a clean sheet of paper. So what Piaggio is doing is saying that, well, if you want to create something that you can sell that's a little bit more affordable, take something you've already got and modify it. And that's what they're doing with this Piaggio P180. I think it's a great strategy.
Besides, it looks cool in battle gray. And I like the name of it, the Hammerhead, since it's a canard aircraft. So enough about that, but I think we'll keep our eye on it with the first flight sometime next year. So let's talk about other unique aircraft. If we hark back to the 80s, there was a song by Nina called 99 Luftballons, where basically the end of the world is started by one balloon. Well, evidently on the Pakistani and Indian borders, which are pretty tense, and India and Pakistan have had a hostile relationship and actually had several hot wars in the 70s. India kept tracking large swarms of UAVs crossing the border and alerted aircraft and scrambled aircraft. And when the aircraft got there, there was no UAVs to be found. And this continued for a while. Kind of a mystery, huh, Max?
Yeah, it's you don't know if you're looking at UFOs or just what it was, but it was, like you say, kind of a mystery, and they weren't sure what was going on, but apparently the mystery has now been solved, and it turns out that these have been actually migratory birds. I don't know if that's kind of embarrassing or what. At least they know what's going on now.
Yeah, well, you had these aircraft flying at fairly low altitudes and fairly slow, and they met the profile of what you would expect a UAV to be, except they were flying in formation to the local watering hole in India from Pakistan. So they're in the process of setting up a tracking system for these birds, so they know that this time next year when they see these UAVs crossing the border, that really it's a flock of birds, or to go back to the 80s reference, a flock of seagulls.
Yes.
So I think that'll take care of our 80s rock music references. So let's talk about some gods. The BAE Taranis made its first flight evidently in Australia.
Yes, this is the maiden flight of this unmanned combat air vehicle, UCAV. It's a technology demonstrator. And this is a pretty stealthy thing. I mean, this is when you look at this thing, it looks like other stealthy aircraft you've seen. Kind of a, how would you describe this, David? Sort of a delta shaped UAV.
Yeah, it's got a large intake on the top of the fuselage for its radar signature. It looks a lot like the Beast of Kandahar, the Sentinel, or the UCAS-D from the Navy, the X-47B. They all have similar profiles. You're talking about flying wings, no vertical surfaces. But Taranis is a unmanned combat vehicle, which is strictly designed to be a penetrator and drop bombs.
Yeah, this thing is pretty moderately sized. It shows a wingspan of about 30 feet, weighs about 18,000 pounds. It has a Rolls-Royce engine apparently in it, about 6,000, a little over 6,000, 6,500 pounds of thrust. So it's not a tiny vehicle, but it is just a technology demonstrator. So this isn't necessarily something that they intend to put into production, but it's something that they can use to explore the capabilities of a stealthy UCAV. And they're looking for something that can do target strikes at long range, but with some human control at play there as well. So it's not totally autonomous, I guess. But the UK has been pretty secretive about this, not providing a lot of detail. And according to the article that we saw in UAS Vision, it's just been seen only twice in public.
Yeah, and actually, we probably still wouldn't know about it. It just happened to be someone dropped the ball and released the fact that it had flown in a parliamentary report. So we haven't seen any footage of it, but it evidently has flown. So I think we can go on to that, and we'll go from UCAVs to VTOLs, vertical takeoff and landings. The first one we can talk about, the article is from Aviation Week, hybrid VTOL UAVs, back to the future. The Aerovel Flex Rotor is a interesting aircraft, and we'll put a video in the show notes of its unmanned skiff or boat launched itself by itself out to the middle of a lake, and the drone took off. Now, the Flex Rotor takes off vertically and has a very large rotor, that propeller that acts like a helicopter. So it takes off vertically. Its wings are sitting in the middle of a cradle. So it takes off vertically. When it gets to altitude, it starts moving forward, and it's kind of cool. It has tailplanes that suddenly pop out, and it flies horizontally. When it wants to land, we go back to 50s technology, like the Pogo from the United States Navy, where it's a tail sitter. So it flies back over the skiff and backs its way down till the skiff catches the wings. It's a very interesting video, and they did it multiple times where it took off and flew by itself autonomously without any hands-on stuff, and then landed itself back onto the skiff.
Interesting. So an unmanned aircraft being launched from an unmanned boat, that's pretty unique. This thing is not gigantic. We see that it's, about 44 pounds? But this span is big, 9.8 feet. That's a pretty significant span for something that only weighs 44 pounds.
Well, yeah, and keep in mind that the majority of the lift in the vertical flight is done by the helicopter. So you want it by the propeller. So you want to keep the weight low. It's going to have a 79-knot speed and could have an endurance of 40-plus hours, which is pretty... It seems to me all of these drones keep getting longer and longer and longer. I mean, luckily we're keeping this podcast at 30 minutes because we could start talking about drones at 48 hours, 62 hours, weeks and months. They just seem to go on and on and on like Energizer bunnies, huh?
Yeah. Now, this Aviation Week article also had another interesting a vehicle that it talked about besides the Flex Rotor.
Yeah, it talked about the IR, which is a thrust wing where the engines are mounted on the wing, and there was something called the Triebflugel by Focke-Wulf in World War II, one of my favorite late war German programs, which was basically if you have a rocket and in the center of the rocket you put a wing or a propeller that spinned around the rocket that could be, had three jet engines on it. So it would spin quickly and lift. And as the aircraft got forward speed, the propeller would stop. So you'd have a three-winged aircraft with jet engines on it. So the IR, which is a new program, is a 25 kilogram. The 200 kilogram or 4.5 to 450 pound UAV, depending upon the size, that will do the same thing. It'll take off on its tail. The engines will speed, propel the propeller like a helicopter, and then they will slow down and become fixed parallel to the fuselage and then provide forward thrust. It's like they said, back to the future. The Germans were way ahead of their time.
So what is the advantage of a vertical takeoff UAV? Does it have to do with the platform it might be launched from? I mean, what's the motivation for these designs that are described in this Aviation Week article?
Why do we have helicopters? If you have tight spaces that you want to get into and the ability to hover, there's a reason why quads, hexacopters, and octocopters are the choice, because they give you multiple options. If you've got limited space and you want to operate, that's where a helicopter comes in. And these are hybrids, so they're kind of trying to get the V-22 best of both worlds out of it. You know, you want to be able to take off and land from a very small space and be able to fly quickly and have endurance forward. So there will always be vertical takeoff and landing aircraft just because they're unique at what they can do.
Hmm. All right. Well, we see again that Australia remains in the news in this area, with an article from ABC News Australia. This is CASA warns bushfire drone operators of potential fines. Now, the Australian CASA, which is the Civil Aviation Safety Authority, that's the regulatory agency in Australia, they're saying that they've seen some videos on YouTube of some remotely piloted drones that had been flying over a couple of the wildfires they've had there. And CASA thinks this is a bad idea. CASA thinks this puts firefighters at risk.
Yeah, it harkens back to a couple of episodes back where we talked about in the floods in Colorado. There were people trying to volunteer to use their drones to help the flood victims and such. The old saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. These people are actually trying to help, but there's a potential that they actually might hinder, you know. God forbid there's a fire bomber drop a water bomb on a fire, and a quadcopter will take out an engine, you know, in this kind of situation. There has to be rules, and that goes back to our initial first article about rules. Yes, you know, they can probably be integrated in, and they would be an enormous help for pinpointing the wildfires, but you have to do it safely, smartly, and you have to work with government officials and not go rogue out on your own.
Yeah, for sure. And government officials, the regulatory agencies, the authorities, are always going to go back to whatever regulations or laws or whatever it is that they operate under and apply those to whatever situation they're presented with. So in the case here, they have something called the Civil Aviation Safety Regulations, and apparently those state that remotely piloted vehicles or aircraft must be at least 30 meters from people unless they have specific approval to be that close. So obviously CASA is going to enforce the regulations that they have on their books. And again, like you say, David, it's kind of a matter of people who are trying to help need to kind of be aware of these things. And, you know, it's kind of unfortunate because maybe in some cases like this, maybe it's too soon to be able to help, even if you'd want to. So it's kind of a struggle.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about rules and regulations and playing by the rules. And There will be a time when I can see that drones will be integrated in, and I don't think it'll be that time soon. But these people need to realize that CASA has to look out for everybody, including the people who are fighting the fires. So I think the fines probably, I mean, hopefully they will not be that stiff because these people were trying to help. But CASA does have to keep control over regulations and can't let people go rogue. So,
sure.
So speaking of rogue waves, the UAS tidal wave to hit future ATE systems. This was from Bob Poole's air traffic control newsletter from the Reason Foundation. At the Aviation Week Next Gen conference, one panel looked at unmanned aircraft systems and determined that our future ATC system, they never thought about unmanned vehicles being part of it. So now what?
Right, exactly. So as you mentioned, this next gen, so-called next gen, is a development of the air traffic control system that brings in some newer technologies and is more responsive to sort of the realities of modern air travel and the need to coordinate all of the aircraft in a way that allows them to operate efficiently. That's something that's much more important now than it has been in the past. And the issue here is that as the concepts for next gen were being kind of developed, there really wasn't any projection at that time of all of these UAVs in the sky at the same time. So the DOT has recently issued a report. It's termed the Unmanned Aircraft System Service Demand 2015 through 2035. This report was prepared for the U.S. Air Force. And there are projections for the number of UASs in the airspace. And the numbers are pretty huge. There's a lot of them. They're looking at about 14,000 to be part of the Department of Defense fleet by 2035. And sort of parenthetically, an interesting item is that that's more than half of all military aircraft. But that's just the military side of it, 14,000. But there's others as well, David. There's the non-military U.S. fleet.
Yeah, the non-military U.S. fleet. Borders and Customs Service, they fly Reapers currently, and they're expected to have, as well as other services like the Forestry Service, I'm sure by 2035 we'll be using drones for fighting forest fires. There's going to be another 10,000. So now we're up to 24,000 UASs in a airspace where they weren't planned to be on. So, and then if we get into the state and public sector, if you think 24,000 is pretty big, we get a number that's what, Max?
70,000 more. And that's, as you say, would be used by states. And this is just in the U.S., by the way, but used by states and other public sector users. This is things like police and fire and that sort of thing. So that's 70,000 more. But, as they say, there's even more.
Yeah, and the final forecast in the commercial market would be 175 UASs in operation by 2035.
175,000.
175,000, yeah. So overall, the U.S. market is expected to be $30 billion in 2035 by this forecast. So we're going to grow. We're going to grow exponentially, and they're not really prepared for it.
This report from the DOT also estimates how much additional cost all these unmanned vehicles add to the task of preparing for next gen and for operating the air traffic control system. And they say that it's somewhere between $500 million to $1 billion per year over a 20-year period. So that's a lot of cost involved. Now, I don't know, having not studied the report, how they determined that, what kind of analysis they did. But I guess the point is, regardless, that there's a price to be paid for coordinating, you know, all of these UASs in the commercial airspace.
Yeah, it's going to be, next gen is not necessarily the quickest moving project ever that the FAA has ever done. And this is just going to be one more complication. So let's hope that they can get up to speed on it. But our last story tonight, and I think I'm going to give us a little permission to go over our hard count, is because both you and I like this story that we've found today, which is, can cargo drones bring e-commerce to Africa, by the Fast Company? So underdeveloped nations, like much of the sub-Saharan continent, they have very rudimentary transportation systems. And someone is setting out to see if they can use drones to act as pack animals, sort of, to take cargo from one city to another using very little infrastructure, and, you know, fly over the roads that really don't exist instead of. So flyingdonkey.org, and yes, that is kind of a website, flyingdonkey.org, is actually setting up a contest for a UAVs to fly around Mount Kenya.
Yeah, this is really interesting. It's the reason it's called Flying Donkey is apparently that when this concept of moving cargo around Africa by drone was being explained to an elder tribesman, it finally clicked in his head, and he said, "Now I see, you want to put my donkey in the sky," which is exactly right. So that's why it's called Flying Donkey. And yeah, this concept is great. I mean, there's the concept of leapfrogging going on here. And we see this time and again with countries that maybe don't have, let's say, telecommunications infrastructure. Phone lines work very poorly. And then along comes mobile phones, and they just put up a few towers, and next thing that you know, that they have a more developed system than other more advanced countries. So the same concept here. Maybe this is a way for them to sort of leapfrog others and provide a way to move cargo around Africa, which is something that, of course, is crucial towards the development of that continent. So flyingdonkey.org. I noticed that there is a newsletter you can subscribe to on their website. So if you want to keep current with this, they have some hurdles. They still need to get regulatory approval from the Kenyan government to conduct this. And they're still looking for funding as well. So it's not a done deal, but it's something that's, I think, very fascinating and has a lot of value, a lot of social value to it. And it's always great when we see social value associated with UAVs.
Yeah, this will be fun to watch. I hope that they get everything they need for the competition. Again, it's spurring on development by offering a monetary prize. We see that a lot in this industry, too. And a lot of creative thinking. So any of these kind of projects that you and I can promote that just herald the future is really cool. And that's one of those joys that we get out of this show.
Absolutely. All right. Well, you've been listening to episode 12 of the UAV Digest. If you'd like to see the show notes, those are at theuavdigest.com. We'll have links to not only the news stories that we mentioned this episode, but also some of the associated links and companies and so forth associated with them. So that'll be a good reference for you if you like to explore some more. And there's some other places where they can find us online. Isn't that right, David?
Yeah, you can. Our website, of course, is the uavdigest.com. You can find us on Twitter at uavdigest. On Facebook.com/UAV Digest. Of course, if you want to send us an email, it's feedback@theuavdigest.com. And we definitely want to hear your suggestions for stories, and we're starting to get those come in. We also got a couple more reviews on iTunes, so that if you love our show and you think that more people should hear us, the best thing you can do is rate us and give us a good review on iTunes, and that puts us up more higher up on the list. So we're well on our way there. And most of all, just thank you for listening. Max and I enjoy doing this every week, and we look forward to doing this for a long time, despite what our wives say.
Yes. All right, David, talk to you next week about UAVs. This is Max in Hartford.
And this is David in Philly saying goodnight to the chicken.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.